the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
He's already one of the most prominent Florida natives in NASCAR history. Ross Chastain's story is well known among racing fans. An eighth-generation watermelon farmer, Chastain rose up from a rural area west of Fort Myers in Alva to become a great story in NASCAR. He's had his share of controversy. He's also been able to smash four watermelons after Cup Series victories. On today's podcast, Chastain joins me to tell me about what he's been up to as he prepares for the 2024 Daytona 500. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course, this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Ross Chastain is here, and he's ready to get back on the track for the 2024 season. Ross, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, well, Daytona 500 coming up here. In three tries, you debuted with a seventh-place finish in your first time there. You were 29th in 2022, and last year, you were back in the top 10, finishing in ninth. So when it comes to difficulty, for all the races you do, where does this race rank, and how hard is it even to be on the lead lap when the checker flag drops in Daytona?
Yeah, it is. Everybody racing in the pack like we do at Super Speedways. Really easy to get caught up in stuff or cause a wreck. And, I've been on both sides. I finished absolutely last in the Daytona 500, which is something I never want to do again. And we've also, you know, been able to see the front in the last few laps. And, we have a shot at the end. That's really all we asked for.
You know, now that you're coming into your fourth time there, does the track still have that same luster it did when you were walking in bright-eyed and, you know, tackling it for the first time? Or have you kind of settled into dealing with this race, and how much does that matter?
No, not settled in at all. This race stands out. On top of it being our first points race of the year, it just holds so much value in my heart and mind. For what that speedway did for this sport when the France family and NASCAR built it so long ago, I view it as a real catalyst for the sport, and it's a part of the foundation that we stand on today. And it's still relevant. It's, you know, updated, huge grandstands, huge facility, beautiful speedway. The nerves are real. It's really hard to go to sleep, but it's so awesome to wake up on Sunday morning of the Daytona 500.
Yeah, very cool. And I've stood on that stand where they wave the checkered flag, even in an empty stadium. That's a really cool thing to do. So you'll be sporting a new car scheme this year. You have a new primary sponsor. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what the fans will be seeing when they see your car out there on the track, and what will be on it?
Yeah, onboarding Busch Light and stepping into the Busch Light colors is an incredible moment for me. We were able to unveil the car at the Busch Light Class last weekend, and now moving forward with the iconic scheme that, you know, fans know Busch Light. They've seen the brand for so long, most, you know, recently with Kevin Harvick. So they're going to see a bit of a, you know, of a different flavor to it, though. I mean, I'm not Kevin Harvick, and I'm not trying to step into his shoes. That's an impossible ask. If anybody was going to ask any human being to do that, Kevin was one of a kind, and now the Busch Army gets Ross Chastain, and they're going to, I don't think they're going to be bored watching for sure. But we get to kick all this off officially for our point season at the Daytona 500. And they're going to get a little flavor of watermelon, as well with my ties to agriculture.
You know, that was going to be one of my questions. You know, Busch Light, they've had specialty beers in the past. One was an apple flavored one. And last year, I believe it was peach. Are we going to see a watermelon flavored beer coming out at any time soon?
I drive the car. I am in no way in St. Louis or anywhere brewing these beers. So, you know, that's up for them to decide down the road. I have no plans right now, but, you know, you never know. I just focus on smashing watermelons and once I get done and out of the car in Victory Lane, drinking the cold Busch Light, that's my job to do. It's my job to drive the car. It's their job to brew the beer.
Well, there you go. A watermelon seltzer, good people at Busch Light. Let's work on that. But I bet somebody smarter than me is already working on it. You know, Ross, you mentioned Kevin Harvick. I mean, look, he had huge shoes to step into when he, you know, first started racing at Daytona, and that, of course, was for Dale Earnhardt. So now you're coming in your fourth try, stepping in for Kevin Harvick. Maybe this is like a rabbit's foot. You ever think that, you know, maybe that this could be your time because of this small change?
I'm not superstitious in those regards. I've tried it or I've been it in the past and believe that a lucky pair of underwear or a certain food had to be eaten. My thought is just that we're here for the right reasons and we get to be here for hopefully a while now, and that's the plan. And, we just go about our business. But I've studied guys like Kevin and the drivers that came before me because I just wasn't raised in the sport. So I had to learn it as I went. And, you know, it's not lost on me the platform I have and the legacy that Kevin built with Busch Light.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of people in Florida rooting for you, especially down there in Alva near Fort Myers. You know, you've raced now for a couple of years in the next gen cars, and they've tweaked them a little bit each year. Are there differences that we're going to be looking for this year, or any you'd like to see in the future?
Yeah, they're evolving, and this car is a common car to everybody. So no matter what team you drive for, you drive the same parts and pieces. You just get to pick the positions that you bolt them on the car. But, you know, something as small as at the Clash, they changed some of the gearbox ratios for the transmission, I'll call it, but the gearbox for the gears. And We quit shifting. Primarily, we were not downshifting in the corners, upshifting on the straightaways. So that's a goal. That's a byproduct of the new car, the Gen 7 car that we've had for 2 years that NASCAR is trying to eliminate. Keep us in whatever gear that they pick. Keep us in that gear all the way around the track so we're not downshifting and upshifting 1,000 times or I guess 2,000 times at Martinsville when we downshift in the every corner and upshift out of every corner. So that's four times a lap we're shifting. You know, we're not looking to do that all the time. So little nuances like that, but that's it. You know, and for us at Chevy and GM, we've kept the same Camaro and we're going to move, you know, keep racing the Camaro. So body lines and car looks the same.
Alrighty, very cool. Well, last year you finished ninth in the point standings in 2023, but you won the final race of the season at Phoenix. So how important was it to kind of finish the year off on a high note like that with your fourth Cup Series victory?
Life achievement. Really can't even measure how big that was still months later, because it's just unheard of for the last decade to go and fight and beat the championship contenders. So to do that, you know, after competing for a championship in 2022, ultimately not being able to win that, come back, be competitive again. And it's absolutely everything you prepare for and dream about. So I'm just ready to get going again and keep, you know, we have established ourselves at Trackhouse. This is my third year, their fourth year as a team. And we'll you know, we sustained it the second year, which is really tough to do. And now we get to, with our people, get to go try to do it again.
All right. Well, you've won two races each of the past 2 years for your total of four. What in your mind, have you thought about what you have to do in 2024 to consider it a successful season? Do you have to match the two? Do you set goals like that for yourself? You know, talk about this upcoming season.
I don't. I don't have number-based, finish-based, any expectations of that. I know that I need to, what time I need to get up in the morning. I know, you know, what I need to accomplish throughout each day and kind of a end of week goal of ahead of each race, but that's it. And once we go to the track, there's no amount of planning that I can do because it's a live sport. There's so much that goes on that's out of my control. I can only control me. So, not any number-based expectations or you know, goals. Just wake up and go to work and see where we stack up.
There you go. Nice pragmatic approach to it. I like it. You know, when you began racing, obviously people were always enthralled in the folksy tale of the eighth generation watermelon farmer, and that was certainly and still is a talking point surrounding you. But, you know, over the last few years, you know, you've had things happen like that video game-like move that made NASCAR change its rules. You've had dust-ups with guys like Denny Hamlin and Noah Gregson and recently Tyler Reddick. So when you talk to media, and I know you're kind of going through what we call the media car wash today, do they still ask you more about the watermelon? Melons, more about the dust ups? Like, what are people mostly asking you about as you go through all these interviews?
It's about racing and Netflix. You know, telling our story, how does it feel to be on Netflix has been the topic today. You know, but I'm proud of ag, and I'm proud that agriculture is what got me into the sport. That's what's, you know, provided for my family for generations. So we're one of the lucky few that get to, you know, still operate in agriculture and are in charge of feeding the rest of the world. So I tell that story and I'm proud of it. So I'm usually interweaving it into conversations just like I am right now.
Yeah, in fact, you know, Netflix, that was later on in my questioning, but I figured a lot of people would ask you that, so I was trying to get to some other things. So really, you know, I want to stick to your background, your family and everything. One of your younger brothers, Chad, who's 6 years your younger, he's making his way into racing. So talk about having your little brother coming along and doing this, and how is he doing? And you know, just give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason why my career has worked out the way it did. There was no plan that it would work or that we would do any more than one race. The original goal was one race. And so the fact that I'm sitting here talking to you now is still a bit unbelievable. And Chad, he did the same racing I did. He raced and at about the same age. I think he was about 11 when he started. I was 12. So he got to run my old race trucks and cars. And then he got his own. You know, there was a time where his future really looked brighter than mine, and just for one reason or another and a bunch of contributing reasons, it just didn't work out. And he's really bought into the farm, the watermelon farm with my dad and him. JDI Farms is our family farm. He is day-to-day there operating it, running the day-to-day for my dad, with my dad's guidance, my dad being there with him. So he's really, really just gotten super involved with that and has been since he got out of high school and then was dabbling in the racing, like you said. But the farm is where his heart is. I mean, yes, if the racing would have worked out, great. But it just, you know, life just hasn't worked out that way. So we're going to see him a lot more at the farm, a lot less at the track. You know, that's just the way the cards are playing out. Cause there's a lot of opportunity for him there. And in order for the farm to succeed and really thrive and grow, it needs him there, and him and my dad realized that.
Is this the same brother that put you to work during the pandemic when NASCAR was shut down and you had to go work on the farm?
That's right. That's right. Yes, sir. Yep. It. Oh yeah. Yeah. He just put me to work again this off season down there. You know, I've gotten better about you know, making sure I'm busy when he really needs me. But it's been a good day on the tractor down there this off season. He runs the show, so he told me what to do.
You know, I'm sure you've been busy throughout the day today, so you might not have seen the story that's up on Daytona Beach News Journal, but they talked to Tyler Reddick about, you know, what happened last week and everything, and he said you guys haven't yet talked. Is that something where you feel like you need to maybe at least break silence before the Daytona 500 comes, or is that just something that may just happen down the road?
No, that's Tyler and I are close enough that it doesn't need to be talked about. We'll go ride mountain bikes, and we're a lot closer than a last lap beating and banging at the LA Clash, an exhibition race that has no meaning. So, tempers were hot and running into each other, and nothing there to speak on. So we're a lot stronger than that.
All right. Well, with the Daytona 500 here on the 18th, will it be one of your farm's watermelons laying in wait to be smashed on the track should you win? Because we wouldn't want to get one, from the local area when you could have one from your own farm. So will one be exported up the 5 or 6 hour drive from Alva?
Not in February. They won't be ready yet. So we plant the first week of January. It takes about 100 days. To get to the first harvest, so middle of April, and they won't be ready, but we've got some friends, and we know people that we'll have plenty of fresh watermelon there for the Daytona 500.
Is there someone on your staff whose job is you're the guy that has to make sure we have a watermelon?
Yes. In the past, it's just been I would stop and get them, or my family would bring them if they were coming to the race. And When I got to Chip Ganassi Racing in the 42 car, Mr. Roy, our hauler driver, we were talking before the season. He said, "Look, but like we're gonna have watermelon ready." And he had a little plastic carrying case he found and sat it in foam, and he went and bought it every week. Him and his wife, when they bought groceries for the hauler. So now we have a really nice, professional, great looking machine metal box that it sits in, and got some green grass, and they just actually posted that on our social channels this week, and it's our hauler drivers. They take good pride in it, in the hauler, and that's a part of their weekly grocery list. Is if we've won, they got to go buy another watermelon. If not, we'll let it ride to the next week.
And there's a great idea for a sponsor. Somebody could put a sponsor label on the box that carries the watermelon.
Hey now.
Well, recently at our paper here in the state of Florida, the Daytona Beach News Journal, our reporter Ken Willis did a series over the winter break while there was no racing going on for the best driver from all 50 states. So he broke it up into 10 parts with 5 in each part. And part 2 included Florida. He chose Fireball Roberts as the top driver from Florida in the history of racing. But you were also on his honorable mentions along with Joe Nemechek, Eric Almirola, Leroy Yarborough, among others. So I don't know if you had heard about this list, but do you know much about Fireball Roberts? And do you think that someday when Ken writes this 20 years from now, will your name be the one he places there?
I don't know enough about the man, to be honest, as I should. And I have no idea what 20 years from now will he'll be able to write, or what someone will be able to write about us. But what's so cool is that I get to go try to write that story now. And the journey of writing that is going to be really fun.
That was a great answer. I appreciate that, Ross. Fireball Roberts, by the way, first name Glenn, won 33 races, and he was from Tavares up there north of Orlando. So 29 more wins, which you got plenty of time to do in your career, and you can tile Fireball. But, the first time I talked to you in 2021, you had raced fewer than 24 times on the Cup circuit, and now you're heading into your fourth year on the circuit. You have 187 races under your belt. So what do you wish you knew as a rookie that you know now?
That there is going to be another race. When I got the Cup and got to CGR, I just thought that was going to be my only shot. And a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of, just pouring over information, data, studying other drivers, and trying to make up for all the lost time that I wasn't in the Cup car that they had been in some 5, 10, 15, 20 years in the Gen 6 car. So, I believe the best thing that happened to me was the Gen 7 car coming along, me being able to be in the testing process of it and experiencing that, and then coming out with Trackhouse, you know, to start the Gen 7 car, it really put us in a spot to be on an equal playing field where I could learn at the same, given the same data points as everybody else, and then it's up to me to retain it. So just knowing there's going to be another race and not thinking that that season was going to be my last.
All right, I just got two more questions for you, Ross. First is, you know, you mentioned Netflix earlier. Obviously, NASCAR and Netflix partnering together. So just give me some thoughts on all of that and being a part of NASCAR Full Speed streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, it was pretty wild to when that first came across the table and we sat down with them and they said, look, you're not going to get to see it before it goes on the service on Netflix. You're not going to get to decide what we show, what we don't. Do you want to in or out? And I was all in. And then as we filmed stuff, I thought, I just hope that they show it in the way that it's meant to be showed and they don't spin it. And I was honest with some of the producers that traveled with us of like, hey, we're showing you this. I'm letting you see stuff that I don't even post on my own social media. Let's don't make me regret it. And I'm super happy with how it came out. Now, would I wish they would have maybe shown the bottle of charcoal toothpaste next to my toothbrush that looks like I have black fungus growing on it? Yeah. You know, I wish they would have shown the viewer what was on there, not just shown the toothbrush zoomed in. Do I wish they would have shown the one car crossing the line and maybe hit us for a few more seconds winning the race at Phoenix? Yes. And then give our champion, Ryan Blaney, everything he deserves. But, you know, they didn't. Those are two small things that I would have edited in if I had the pencil to do it, but I didn't, and I'm happy with how it came out.
All right. Well, very cool. Everyone should check that out. Again, that's NASCAR Full Speed streaming on Netflix. Ross, last question is, you know, over a couple of weeks ago, Cale Yarborough, NASCAR legend, passed away. He was one of my favorites growing up as a kid. I loved watching Cale race. And of course, he won multiple times there at the Daytona 500. He was 84 years old. So did you ever get to meet Cale along the way? Were you a fan of his? Did you know much about him? Because I know that he was out there racing before you were even born.
Yeah, he was. And no, I didn't. I didn't get the chance to get to know him. I've heard stories and I've looked up and watched a lot of old videos in my time of studying this sport as I was trying to figure out how to get to the Cup when I was just part-time in the truck series or driving hospitality motorhomes for companies or spotting a couple times in my career. Just trying to figure out what I was supposed to do. And obviously those old races come up and late night YouTube rabbit holes I went down. The Wood Brothers have been a group and a couple of guys and girls that I've gotten to meet some of them and their family, and they've told me stories about them, which is really, really neat. But all secondhand, never did get to meet him and really get to know him.
Alrighty. Well, he might not have been on Full Speed like you on Netflix, but he was in an episode of The Dukes of Hazzard. So you got to go back and check that out, Ross.
Yeah, I need to.
Alrighty. Well, I'm sure it's probably out there on YouTube or something like that. But Ross, before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to get in front of the audience? Anything else you'd like to add? Maybe something I forgot to ask? The floor is yours.
Man, that's it. Just excited to get racing and it'll be here before we know it.
All righty. Well, there's going to be a lot of people across the state who are going to be rooting for you, Ross. I really appreciate it. And maybe next time I talk to you, I can call you Daytona 500 winner, Ross Chastain.
Man, that's pretty wild. I'll take you up on that one day, maybe.
All righty. Sounds good. Thank you, Ross.
All right. Have a good one.
And that will do it for another episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters. And to quote the comedian who made the watermelon famous, Gallagher, I wish there was a knob on the TV so you could turn up the intelligence. They got one marked brightness, but it don't work, does it? Considering how bright you are, I'm happy with how you are. Thanks for listening, and join me again next time.